Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU provides each of our listeners with current information on a wide variety of topics related to health, athletic performance, fitness, and nutrition. On track one, Corey will provide his commentary adapted from current research data, the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Distance Education Program, and his clinical experience. On track two, he will be joined by Tracy Holly on He Said, She Said, for her female focus on topics related to whole food, health, relationships, and raising healthy children. Track three features an interview with our special guest, who will share their expertise and experience in the healthcare, fitness, and sports nutrition field. Now, here is Corey Holly and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, March 2005. Last month, I provided a commentary on the importance of looking out for number one, meaning take care of yourself and your own personal health first before putting energy into anyone else. In industrial first aid, the number one consideration taught when attempting to help anyone who has been injured is to ensure your own safety first. If the cabin pressure in an airplane changes, forcing the need for supplemental oxygen, the message to everyone inside the aircraft is to put the oxygen mask on your own face first, including even parents with children. The point being is that if you go down, you're no good to anyone else, and you yourself become a liability instead of an asset. The title of this month's commentary is Principles of Weight Management. Everyone, to some degree, is biologically unique. It's clear that certain individuals possess the inherent ability to store body fat more efficiently than others. Our genes do affect our predisposition to accumulate body fat, but once we understand this aspect of human physiology, it is still our responsibility to understand our own personal limitations and tolerance for food as a source of fuel and energy. Management of body composition is clearly an issue of self-determination and rationalization. Proclivity to fat or energy storage need not be viewed as a weakness or a liability, just a state or condition subject to our control. Many, many factors determine the outcome of our physical form and shape. Physical activity or inactivity, routine exercise, choice of exercise, involvement in sport, existing lean mass, basal metabolic rate, infection and disease, thyroid function, digestion, absorption, and assimilation of food, hormonal interaction, gender, insulin resistance, glucose intolerance, what we do for work, age, appetite, quantity and quality of food consumed, frequency of meals, macronutrient ratio, undersupply of micronutrients, stress, worry, state of mind, and so on, represent some of the major factors. The good news is that it's never too late. Over time, with the right approach and correct mental attitude, it is possible to alter our course and have control over those variables that dictate our phenotype or how our genetic hardware is expressed. First things first, the percentage of body fat each of us carries is always relative to what we eat, when we eat, and how we eat. Of course, our expenditure of energy through physical movement does make a difference. But what and when we eat is often a function of what is eating us. Emotions play a very large role in food addiction, eating disorders, and disordered eating. So do food allergies. Perhaps today, more than ever before, food has become a weapon of mass destruction. Refined carbohydrates, denatured protein, and altered fats form the basis of the standard North American diet, along with literally thousands of toxic chemical preservatives, colors, and dyes. Food must be chosen with health and performance in mind, or we will succumb to disease caused by weakness of the immune system and the slow, gradual poisoning of every cell, membrane, tissue, and organ. Empty calories devoid of enzymes, vitamins, and minerals are deadly and can only serve to weaken the resources we need to offset the effects of living to our fullest potential. The endomorph, or easy gainer, has the potential to stay lean for life, believe it or not. Age is a factor, but not an excuse. Aerobic exercise and resistance training combined with optimum nutrition is the answer all the way. Food portions must be controlled, carbohydrate intake must be managed, and physical activity must be embraced. For example, the function of fat as a source of essential fatty acids and fat-soluble vitamins make it a biological necessity. The trick is to avoid trans fats and processed dead fat, otherwise known as white oils. This reference ties in with the white death concept of eating refined sugar and white flour as a staple in ludicrous amounts. Now let's talk about counting calories. Counting calories, in my opinion, is passé all the way. Weighing food is ridiculous. Instead, count food quality. You must learn how certain foods react within your system biochemically. Unlike the ectomorph or the hard gainer, an endomorph can't eat as much food or consume starch as a major staple. The biological demand simply isn't there. Oh yes, endomorphs can certainly pack it in if they want to. They love food, especially things like cheese, bread, and sweets. Problem is, they end up wearing most of it, and this leads to frustration and depression. In this model, tolerance for carbohydrates is low, and tolerance for carbs with low water volume will always be low. That's just the way it is. A slow-moving machine with a relatively low metabolic rate doesn't require much fuel, yet we tend to crave food and it can drive us nuts. When eaten in excess and once reduced to their most basic simple state, carbohydrates can raise insulin through our metabolic roof, creating the perfect environment for conversion into triglycerides. Ultimately, these newly formed fats need somewhere to live, and if the demand for energy is low, or if the body becomes less able to process the raw materials it requires to make the wheels of its engine turn, they will be stored in various regions throughout the body and most visibly in the least active parts. Flour is a major culprit. It's one of the highest on the scale of carbohydrate density, which means that in terms of mass, it is low in water and therefore relatively high in carbohydrates or glucose or sugar or energy or calories. Call them what you will. By the way, when I refer to calories in this context, think in terms of potential energy that exists in food. Most heavy-set people prone to gaining body fat love to eat pasta, bread, muffins, bagels, cookies, cakes, pretzels, salted nuts, chips, pizza, etc. Just watch people at parties, potlucks, and family get-togethers, anywhere where there's food. They can be compared to drug addicts, driven to eat food by their addiction, which gives them immediate pleasure. They perceive themselves as having no control, but in fact, they are in control and are making those choices. Because if they aren't, I want to know who's inside of them, driving them to do what they're doing. Heavy refined carbohydrates and even natural carbohydrates eaten to excess without the appropriate quantity of protein can have an undesirable effect on insulin levels. This creates blood sugar instability and increases our capacity to store more and more fat. We know that when insulin levels elevate in response to the consumption of a high carbohydrate meal, especially high glycemic carbs, an enzyme called lipoprotein lipase increases, inhibiting the oxidation of fat. Elevated insulin is toxic, and even it can be converted into fat. Essential fatty acids are elongated and desaturated in the liver and converted into more active metabolites such as eicosapentaenoic acid, or EPA, gamma-linoleic acid, GLA, or arachidonic acid, also known as AA. These long-chain fatty acids are converted into three series of prostaglandins in the body, which belong to a family of superhormones called eicosanoids. In simple terms, Eicosanoids can be good or bad depending upon how much of what is produced. This has to do with how much of what fat we consume per meal and in total grams each day. Some eicosanoids inhibit platelet aggregation, others promote it. Some are anti-inflammatory, while others promote inflammation. Some encourage the production of cholesterol, others help reduce it. Insulin has a very direct effect on eicosanoid activity. When insulin is overproduced, it can inhibit certain enzymes that allow the bad eicosanoids to become more proactive. This effect can deny access to body fat as a fuel source, depress immune response, and increase the transmission of pain. Successful weight management is in part also reliant on your ability to calculate in advance and consume the correct amount of protein you require daily. Protein consumption, meaning total grams eaten per day, is based on your lean mass and both volume and intensity of exercise. The habit of eating smaller quantities of food more frequently throughout the day is also very important. Functional food partitioning is absolutely critical to successful body composition management. Now, here are a few guidelines we all need to understand and apply when it comes to reducing body fat and improving the quality of muscle in our body. Number one, get to the gym. Train 5 to 6 days per week using moderate weights, medium to high rep range, and moderate intensity. That's a good way to start. If you have a relatively slow metabolism, you're destined to gain excess body fat unless you compensate with a lot of physical movement. For example, sitting in front of a computer all day long is not ideal if you have a slow metabolic rate that allows you to gain body fat. You got to get up off your butt and move your butt around, otherwise it's going to collect body fat. Incorporate aerobic exercise on a daily basis for maybe 30 minutes or longer per session with moderate intensity. Do your main cardio after weight training, not before, excluding, of course, a short, low-intensity warm-up period of, say, cycling or on the treadmill. Brisk walking, dancing, swimming, inline skating, cycling, etc., these things should become a way of life. Find something that you enjoy and get into moving your body. The other alternative is to give up your passion for food and consume a sparse, low-fat, high raw food diet and combine this approach with frequent fasting sessions. That's the only way you're going to keep the body fat off, but that's not ideal. You're going to become micronutrient deficient. You got to move the body and you got to feed the body when you're moving it. That's what sport nutrition is. Again, weight-bearing resistance should be an essential part of your lifestyle, as building lean muscle tissue will keep you fit for life and continue to burn calories for many hours after your workout is done. 2, consume high-quality foods. Avoid dairy products in general and significantly reduce starches like bread, pasta, cereal, potatoes, and rice. Increase your intake of high water volume, low glycemic foods such as green and colored organic vegetables, salads, and fresh fruit. Consume a variety of high-quality, low-fat proteins such as white fish, turkey breast, or buffalo. The best time to eat fruit is in the morning or blend it in protein shakes. Drink plenty of water, preferably before or 1 to 2 hours after eating, but not during meals. Many athletes commit themselves to working out routinely, but never lose unwanted body fat because a high percentage of what they eat consists of enzyme-deficient, lifeless food. Living foods are vital to success and long-term health. Now, not all bread is bad, but most varieties fail to make the grade when looking for protein density, fiber, nourishment value, and a low to intermediate glycemic index. Choose black bread, pumpernickel, and sprouted grains over commercial wheat and standard air-puffed white breads. Fermented whole grains are also acceptable, as the lactic and propionic acids present in sourdough help modify blood sugar. Most commercial multigrain breads and the so-called health breads are loaded with white flour, chemically altered fats, and tons of salt. Always read the label. And here's my bread test. 1. Hold the loaf in one hand and feel its weight. It should feel heavy and look dense, almost like an iron dumbbell. 2. Put your fingers and thumb around the top of the loaf. If you can squeeze the loaf from the outside more than an inch towards the center with very little pressure, it fails the test. And 3. Find the ingredient panel on the label and examine the contents. If the bread contains white flour, sugar, hydrogenated fats, and salt, it fails the test. And here's my challenge. Try and find a loaf of bread without any salt. That's tough. Here's 3. Modify late-night eating habits. Avoid eating after your evening meal. This principle ties in with the concept of retiring early and rising early. Late-night television will set you up for snack patterns that will destroy your progress. The body needs an opportunity to cleanse itself, and loading up on food concentrated in sugar, fat, or salt before going to bed poisons the blood. Drink small quantities of fluids after dinner, like mineral water or herbal tea. If you wake up feeling sluggish and exhausted, think about what you consumed the night before. For many of us, the last meal should be 3 to 4 hours before we hit the sack. This strategy will enable your body to metabolize and use some body fat as a fuel source during sleep, as your body is expending energy to repair tissue, mend fibers, and detoxify itself. But loading up on food before bed prevents this benefit. Once you achieve an ideal body composition, a small quantity of low glycemic carbs combined with lean protein makes a good bedtime snack and prevents muscle wasting, as do protein shakes. I have a protein shake pretty much every night, a shake dominated by whey protein isolate and blended in filtered water with a tablespoon of a good sport oil rich in EFAs. I also add a small amount of a low glycemic fruit, such as a pear, peach, blueberries, or a green apple. With this approach, the glucose from the carbs filters into the bloodstream slowly and continuously while I'm sleeping over a much longer period of time, and this prevents any insulin spiking when I'm asleep. And this is important because if you elevate insulin because of a high carb, high glycemic meal before bedtime, you'll almost entirely foul up your REM sleep and inhibit growth hormone release, and that can really wear your immune system down. Dinners, remember, should always be serving restricted, meaning no second helpings, especially on the carbs, potatoes, rice, that kind of thing. Watch the carbs if you want to be lean, especially high glycemic carbs. Remember, I refer to carbs as biological gasoline, only supply the demand. When you exceed your threshold as an endomorph, you will retain water, you'll look puffy, and you'll start to gain body fat. 4, make your diet more energy efficient. When carbohydrates are consumed, depending on your metabolism, physical activity level, and abundance of nutrients available, a majority of the calories will be oxidized or burned for energy by your cells. Excess glucose is converted into glycogen through a process known as glycogenesis. And once the liver and muscle cells are saturated with this important fuel, any additional glucose is converted into glycerol and fatty acids, a process described in textbook biochemistry as lipogenesis. The next step after lipogenesis is conversion of these fatty acids into triglycerides, or basically body fat. And by consuming less glycemic carbohydrate-rich foods, you can prevent the formation of triglycerides in the blood. Supply the demand. Also, by increasing your consumption of dietary supplements and nutrient-rich foods, your body will be better equipped to convert glucose into energy instead of body fat. It's important to remember that for most of us, it took years to put the excess body fat on if we've got some. It doesn't happen overnight. The key is to recognize that the body needs time to change composition and reach a state we feel comfortable with, an ideal state that prevents disease and allows us to achieve optimum performance in our sport and training activities. Many of us look at fat or adipose tissue with remorse, allowing our emotions to override our intellect and objectivity. Adipose tissue is a living, breathing part of who we are. Our body does what it is metabolically designed to do, given its circumstances, Change your thoughts, change your action, and then the outcome will change. So if you're struggling with your weight, it's time to stop abusing yourself with negative thoughts, inactivity, and an unhealthy, non-nourishing diet. If you don't make the necessary changes now, where do you think you're going to be 10 to 20 years from now? It's going to get worse, believe me. You've got to do something about it right now. Today, you might be fat, but tomorrow, you could have something really serious like type 2 diabetes or be diagnosed with breast cancer or develop some immunological autoimmune disease. So we don't want that. We want to live free of pain and disease. Once we begin to treat our body with respect and nurture and support the process with activity, positive thoughts, and a whole natural diet, it will definitely and gladly respond. Good things take time, so be kind to yourself and give your body the time it needs to restructure, reshape, and transform. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from Anthony Robbins, motivational speaker and author of Awaken the Giant Within and Unlimited Power. The higher your energy level, the more efficient your body. The more efficient your body, the better you feel, and the more you will use your talent to produce outstanding results.